Thank you very much. So we are called to order. We do have a quorum present. First, I'd like to open the discussion for public comment. Do we have any members of the public? We have. Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
Good evening, thank you for listening to me again this evening, and thank you to this committee for paying attention to the concerns of Blue Line riders. I think that it is an important issue, and I appreciate the time you're paying attention to. I know that later this evening the plan manager is going to speak with you, and one thing I want you to be thinking about in terms of the Blue Line is how long do you actually think is reasonable to ask riders to wait during rush hour? And not only how long do you think it's reasonable to ask them to wait, but how much uncertainty do you think is reasonable to ask them to have? By having a 12-minute wait for between trains, even if you happen to show up at the right time, you're still having to, when the train is, exactly when the train is arriving, you're still having to plan your schedule for the worst-case scenario. Your boss isn't going to accept, well, I'm going to be somewhere between around six minutes late every day because there's less service. So that uncertainty is also impacting people. So that's something that you should be thinking about. And I think is an important question for Metro to address is what really is a reasonable time? And in thinking about that, keep in mind that the 12-minute wait that Metro is asking Blue Line riders to wait is among the longest wait times of any Metro system in the country. Every other line is near the top in DC, but the Blue Line is near the bottom in the country. So far, since the already reduced service was cut further in August, the additional cuts have cost Blue Line riders collectively about 138,000 hours waiting for trains compared to what they're waiting just last July. That's a lot of time that Metro is asking Blue Line riders to wait for an overcrowding problem which every data point that Metro has put out has said does not exist. There is not an overcrowding problem on the lines that the Blue Line has been cut to accommodate. So I really do encourage this committee, as responsive as you have been to these concerns, to formally ask Metro, to pass a resolution, formally ask Metro to restore service to Blue Line because it really is unacceptable, and every additional day you wait is costing riders hundreds of more hours. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Who's next?
So I'm not sure what more Blue Line riders can say that hasn't already been said. This is clearly an unfair situation, but I want to reiterate Jeff's comments about what is reasonable in terms of expectations for wait times, but also what's reasonable to expect us to pay for half of the service that everyone else is getting. I just think fundamentally it's just a ridiculously unfair situation. I will say I actually no longer ride the Blue Line on a regular basis. My wife and I moved into DC at the beginning of this year. And a major factor was the Blue Line. Our commute was just incredibly long, incredibly crowded, and oftentimes so unpredictable that it really added so much stress to our lives that we felt like it wasn't worth it to continue commuting on the Blue Line. But I still have numerous friends who live in Alexandria who commute on the Blue Line daily. And what they've said to me is, you know, even though we had a very productive meeting last fall with Metro officials, and they seemed very responsive in hearing our concerns, there really have been no changes, not only in terms of releasing the data that's been requested, but also in terms of addressing some of the other issues on the Blue Line, like the fact that people boarding at Franconia Springfield don't know what train they're boarding and when the train is leaving. The fact that there doesn't seem to be any effort to prioritize Blue Line trains going through the Roslyn Tunnel. And, you know, little information is communicated to riders when they're sitting in that tunnel, waiting for Orange and Silver Line trains to cross over in front of them. And those are all issues that we raised in the meeting last fall and that Metro officials indicated they would look into addressing. And so far we've seen little evidence that they're moving forward with that. So again, I want to ask that you ask Metro to address these issues.
Thank you, Colin. And who's next?
So hi and good evening. Thanks very much for listening to me here. I'm a daily commuter on the Metro. I ride from King Street to Roslyn and back. And
oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had to turn it on. Anyhow, thanks very much for your time tonight. My name is Ryan Franks. I'm a commuter on the Blue Line from King Street to Roslyn and back daily. And I'm concerned about the overcrowding on the Blue Line, and especially it's causing a major safety concern. Prior to this month, I hadn't been keeping track, but three times this month, specifically March 19th, March 25th, and March 12th, the Blue Line had to be offloaded at Pentagon, causing a major safety concern where they actually had to stop the escalators to prevent overcrowding on the platform. And furthermore, the problem will only increase, and I'd like to ask this committee to look into the development that's occurring in Alexandria. There's lots of development occurring along the King Street and Braddock Road corridors, and this will only exacerbate the problem over time. Finally, one last point. I'm very concerned about the conduct of the Metro drivers. Their comments are very, very unprofessional, and they seem to go from zero to 100. There's no other Metro system in the world, and I've ridden plenty, where the drivers actually have the opportunity to comment and condescend their customers like there is on Metro, and I would ask this committee to do something about that. Thank you very much.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
When you talk about the Metro drivers, you are speaking of buses or trains or both?
Trains.
Trains, thank
yes,
you.
Thanks.
Are there any other public commenters? I would like to mention, if you are not already aware, those of you that have been, well, all of you that spoke about the Blue Line, we are, our guest speaker tonight is someone that's going to talk to us very exactly about that issue. So I hope you can stay and be a part of that discussion. Thank you. So I'll close the public comment period and moving on to the agenda. Any changes to the agenda? Any objections to the agenda? Hearing none. I can never remember if I'm supposed to ask if everybody has to vote on that. No voting. Okay, thank you. The minutes. You have in your packet minutes from the last meeting in March. And do we have any corrections to make to the minutes? We can always count on you, Deborah. Please, Deborah, go ahead.
About the minutes of March 25th, on page 4, not that big. It's just a minor error. Right before paragraph 7, committee report, the last statement is just the grammar error. It's just a minor one. On page 4, it said that emergency personnel who were trained in American Sign Language would be, just a minor error. One of the words, be, should be eliminated. That's all.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch. Did you catch it, James? That's what matters. No, you did not. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Page four. And how, where in the page 4?
The last paragraph.
Last paragraph, okay.
One to third paragraph, and the last sentence.
Third paragraph from the top, where it starts off with Ms. Silva. And then she's talking about the last line in that paragraph. On page 4.
I guess I'm looking, there's a page number 4 at the top, and there's a 3 at the bottom. So maybe that's my problem. You've got it. Okay, you had it. I think I was mixed up. Thank you. You have, James, you have it. Okay. All right. And Ryan.
Just actually a friendly correction, as there is a lot of gentlemen here tonight from the Blue Line. On Jeff Larimore's testimony from the public comment number two, it just basically says 1-2 trains per house. I think that's supposed to be an hour. So, So just because probably want to get that bit.
Thank you. Any other corrections to the minutes? Hearing none. All in favor, may I have a motion to accept?
So moved.
So moved. There's been a, and Catherine has seconded. All in favor? Aye. And all opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you.
Okay.
Oops. Back on. Tonight we're welcoming, I'm going to let you introduce yourself because I'll get the pronunciation wrong. But we have a representation from our Office of Strategic Planning, so I'll let them introduce themselves and welcome to the RAC meeting. And while you're getting settled up there and getting your microphones on, I'll mention that one of the questions we pose to everyone is, sometimes you come at our request and sometimes at yours, and regardless, we always want to know what we can do to help and what we need, if you're looking for anything specific from us that we haven't already asked for. Thank you. And we'll have a question and answer at the end.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee. My name is Shyam Kannan, and I run the Office of Planning here at Metro. I've got my colleague here, Jennifer Weeks, who runs our Office of Strategic Planning within planning, and we've been invited here to spend some time with you this evening, good evening, I should say, to discuss some of the ridership shifts that we're seeing after the commencement of service on the Silver Line last summer. And so what we're going to do tonight is walk through some of the broader trends we're seeing. We're going to touch on some things that are specific to the Silver Line as well as the impact that it's had on other lines of service, as well as give you some information on trends that we're seeing system-wide. And we're really here to listen, and we'd love to hear how these data and how these trends sit with you and what thoughts you may have for us as we go back and continue the work of advanced planning, and that's sort of planning for the future of the system, and what things you'd like us to take into consideration as we provide some advice to those who are conducting the near-term operations. And with that, I will turn it over to Jennifer. We're kind of going to tag team a little bit here, so if we switch back and forth, I think you'll be able to tell our voices apart.
Is this on? Okay, yeah, start with that. Good evening. My name is Jennifer Weeks. I'm the new Director of Strategic Planning here at Metro, and so I'm very pleased to be here with you. Shyam is my backup, of course, as he just mentioned. What did I do with that? You've got it. Go ahead. All right, so as Shyam stated, we're going to start with some general trends about Silver Line. I know that some of you have seen some of this, and bear with us, but there is some new material here as well. So moving right along. So as we all know, Silver Line opened with much fanfare last July. We started out fairly robustly at about 15,000 riders for a few months. And you can see that we have had some decline in ridership on the Silver Line since the beginning of its opening. I don't think we've seen that to be a huge surprise in light of some trends that you'll see later on about the whole system. But in general, I think we're doing pretty well. We're at about 13,500 riders today. This is a snapshot in time. So one of the things we like to do in strategic planning is we do a lot of ridership analyses, and we try to find a day that mimics a typical day in Metro, because I think, as all of you know, there aren't that many of those. But September and May tend to offer good months for that. And so in September, we saw, as I noted a minute ago, about 14,800 riders on the Silver Line. That's about 60% of what was projected way back in 2004 in the final environmental impact statement. I don't know if many of you made it through that, but I'll bet you there were several volumes for that document. Wheelie, which is the terminus today, sees the vast majority of our riders. It generates the most trips. When I say riders, it's the trips. We're talking about the trips that come from that station that day. And that actually has met the projection for opening day, whereas the rest of the stations are lagging a bit behind. So there are, as we say, room to grow. There is room to grow at the other Tyson stations, and we're starting to think about that. Well, what could that be? We've thought about walkability. We've thought about the nature of employment at these stations. Many of them have long provided employees with free parking, for example. So we're starting to examine some of these things and see if they're influencing ridership and see if there's anything that we could do to address that. So where are Silver Line riders going? So 32% of the riders are actually going to five stations, and that's not a big surprise because most of these are in the core. A big one, but is unique to the Silver Line, is Ballston. Actually, it's probably not unique. It's probably Orange Line probably has a lot of people going to Ballston as well. But we also, Foggy Bottom, Farragut West, McPherson Square, Metro Center, all core stations that are getting a lot of riders. 63% fully are crossing the river at Roslyn, in the Roslyn Tunnel, and 37% are staying in Virginia. So it's got its own unique qualities. I know you know this because our speaker this evening talked about it. Two of our speakers did, but clearly when we introduce new service, sometimes we have winners and sometimes we have losers. And in this case, we had we found ourselves forced to reduce the frequencies of trains on the Blue Line to 12 minutes. And so that is something that you're experiencing and that you're discussing with us. And similarly, we had to talk about and shift our trains per hour. So something you may know or may not know is that we have a major physical constraint on the Orange, Silver, and Blue Lines, where they all are trying to cross the mighty Potomac at Roslyn. We can only permit 26 trains an hour. So Metro had to make some tough decisions about who would lose trains, who would gain trains in light of the fact that we were literally introducing a brand new train into the system. The map behind you, the red indicates places where there are fewer trains. The blue indicates where they're the same. And the green, which is virtually all silver, and a little bit of yellow and green indicates that there are more trains per hour. And so you'll see that the section that causes a lot of grief for a lot of you is that portion between Pentagon and Roslyn, right, where you've had to make the tough decision. Are we going to take the train that you've diverted a couple of Blue Line trains, we've diverted a couple of Blue Line trains onto yellow in hopes that some of you might be willing to transfer at LaFont Plaza? We recognize that there's a huge disadvantage to that. Maybe not huge, but there is a time difference, right? And it does require some decision-making on your part. So that's one place where we've lost trains, and also the Orange Line west of East Falls Church.
If I might just touch base on this slide for a moment. One of the things, it was anyone here in the body with us tonight present back in 2004 when the original Silver Line operating plan was brought for the public and accepted? Does any hands? Okay. So one just note of historical context is that we've known, and when I say we, I'll use the royal we, the DC region and all of the Metro Compact jurisdictions have been aware about this service change for 10 years, meaning that when the Silver Line operating plan was put forth, it was envisioned to move more trains onto Orange and Silver and to reduce service on the Blue actually down to 14 minutes, a train every 14 minutes. And part of that actually involved moving some Blue Line trains from their origins all the way up to Greenbelt and using that different alignment. And over the course of time, there were some shifts. In essence, several Blue Line trains per hour were essentially recolored and they became Yellow Line trains by convention. Those trains still do go to Greenbelt. And then as a result of some operational gymnastics that took place in 2012, planners were able to put together a situation where we could bring the blue line down to one train every 12 minutes, understanding that that's not one train every 6 minutes, but there have been efforts after the original plan was put forth almost 10 years ago to make some improvements to the overall service. And then we also know that right now, Blue Line is experiencing more A-car trains in the peak than any other line in the system, and we're happy to note that it will be the first line to experience the 7000 series cars, which if you haven't seen them, they're really beautiful. We really hope you love the ride. We really hope you enjoy the ride. So I suppose all of this history lesson is to say that what we are all together doing here, and we want to hear from you, and when I say we want to hear from you, we want to hear from you and take your suggestions into consideration. We're living with a plan that's 10 years old, and the world has certainly evolved around us, and the question we all have now in front of us is, what do we collectively do? So with that, we'll sort of continue to move forward.
Thank you, Sean. That's actually a perfect transition, because we have heard you, and we're starting to really evaluate what's going on here. A lot of you have said, for example, we've heard individuals say, well, we're stopping taking this blue line. It's really inconvenient. So we wanted to do some research using data, and we use smart cards that help us to determine, is this really happening? And so what you see on this slide is the blue line is the blue lines, what we call the negatively impacted riders. So it's the Virginia portion, basically from Franconia to Pentagon, destined to destinations just this side of Metro Center, if that makes sense. So we had to actually isolate those trips, and we have to anyway, because smart cards don't tell us what line you're taking, so we have to do a little bit of sleuthing on our own. And it compares the ridership on those blue line riders to the system as a whole, and we've normalized both so that we can really see the trends. You can see that, lo and behold, as I stated earlier, ridership in general is going down. The really dramatic drops, by the way, are snow days and Christmas is in there. These are Tuesdays, by the way, again, trying to capture that normal average day. Blue Line is lagging just a little under the system as a whole. These particular trips. So we are seeing this and we are paying attention to it. Another place we're looking at this is at the crowding issue. We heard a lot of people talk about crowding. And as you know, one of the key performance indicators that we report in our vital signs report is this thing called passengers per car. And we just now released, a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. It was February, maybe it was January, we released the 2014 Vital Signs report. And so what you're seeing here is how the blue line and the orange line perform against one another in the AM rush at what are called max load points. And those are the points in which we generally see the most crowding on a train at a given point in the full length of its trip. So the board, the Metro board, established a standard of 100 passengers per car as what they'd like to see, right? That's the best case. 65 seats are all filled. There are standees, but it's not impossible. People can move, they can get in, they can get out. On either end of that, a low end is 80 and a high end is 120. Okay, so if we're butting up against 120, we know that things are really uncomfortable. When we look at this, and this is for September, October, and November of last year, we see that certainly Blue Line has had some crowding, particularly at Pentagon, also at Roslyn, but that's gone down. Well, that could be because of what this gentleman talked about. Fewer people are riding. Who knows? But we definitely see a situation where there is some crowding. We looked at it and compared it to orange. We used to refer to the orange line as the orange crush because of how incredibly crowded those trains were. Since the silver line has opened, a lot of that crushing has been relieved. And so we're seeing that as well. But, notice that we're still at a pretty high level of service at the max load point at Courthouse. So as I referred to earlier, and as I guess the fixing it should probably be in quotations, because these are not going to comfort you in the sense that these are fixes, correct? But we're taking a look at these trends and saying, what can we do short of building a new crossing across the Potomac River, which would cost us hundreds of millions of dollars and is certainly not going to happen anytime in the near future, to address some of these trends, you know, make you more comfortable, address some of these things. And so the first thing we did, as Sean mentioned earlier, is that we've increased operations on the Blue Line to all 8-car trains. That should give a little bit of relief in that regard. And we've selected the Blue Line to debut the new 7,000 series of rail cars. And that is going to be a really exciting thing for you, and I hope that you'll be there in 2 weeks to experience that. We're starting to look at scheduling and what are the opportunities to do something about rail scheduling. We haven't an answer for you right now. I don't even know what they're thinking about, and neither does Sean at this point. But the promise we can take to you is if there is something, you will be the first to know. You'll know it before we take it to the board.
And I'd like to just like to add that as the team is taking a look at scheduling options, what we'd like to be able to do is to bring any ideas we come up with to this group in the summer and field them with you first. So that is what the team is doing back in the shop right now. I will tell you that it's a topic of ongoing work and discussion and modeling and scheduling, and if the team is able to come up with something that we believe is worthy of your consideration, we'd like to be able to do that this summer.
And I guess that to also note that we've thought about this in the long term as well in our strategic plan, and Metro 2025 have some capital investments identified to help us deal with capacity along this line. So with that, I also wanted to give you some context because, yes, Blue Line is experiencing some reductions in ridership, but we take a good hard look at ridership in my shop every single day. It's probably the principal thing that we look at on a daily basis. And so what I wanted to show you is that ridership is sort of a subject of some anxiety for us anyway. There are a lot of things going on. And you can see this particular graph shows a comparison of a particular month's ridership against the same month in the previous year. So we saw a lot of decrease in ridership at the beginning of 2014, about the time that the federal subsidy went down from 240 a month to 130, for example. That's a theory, and we have a lot of theories. And so we've just seen it go up and down ever since then. It's restored a little bit, but it's not perfect. So where are our riders? You know, we're taking a look at a number of theories. These are theories. They have not been proven as facts yet. We are looking at them. Some of them, actually, we do have some answers for, and you'll see them in a minute. You know, the economy is not the same as it's been when we first planned this system and even added on to it as recently as 10 years ago when we were looking at Dulles. Things were different. You know, people are teleworking, and they're making fewer trips on any mode, for that matter. The growth in D.C. region is very highly dependent upon the federal government, and the federal government is not growing. Other parts of our American economy are. And the reduced federal subsidy, and I'll mention that one in a minute. I think there have been some sort of socio-demographic trends as well. Our travel options have grown. People are taking other types of modes. You don't have to own a car and still take Metro every day. You can car share, you can bike share, you can walk. There are all sorts of things. And then clearly we're taking a look closely at customer satisfaction and quality service. So I stuck this in here, which wasn't in your packet, but we take customer survey, satisfaction surveys every quarter. And so I was like, well, geez, you know, what does that survey show us? And we're not finding that the orange demonstrates that this last quarter of calendar year 14, we still have quite a few people, about a third of our riders who say that we're doing better than we were last year at the same time. And that's the question. What is the, how are we doing? Are we doing better or worse or about the same? So, you know, that's not pointing to anything robustly at that point. But we certainly would like to do better. We certainly hear the things that are in the papers and what's up, what have you. We've taken a look at the impacts of the SMART benefits, and this one is really demonstrating some clear answers. We're finding, if you look at the very top graphic, that those people that use SMART benefits for to pay for all of their trips, they've decreased their ridership tremendously. And the one on the bottom shows that as people are running out of money, they're stopping using the system, or they're using it less because they're finding that they have to supplement from their own pockets. And then another one, which is, this was one that I think I drove my staff crazy. I was new to Metro, and I said, there's got to be a correlation between gas prices and ridership, because gas prices are going down and down and down. Well, and they said, no, you know, that doesn't happen at Metro. Well, you know what? They were kind of right. when we did one of our survey questions was, well, how much influence does gas prices have on your mode choice? And 67% said, well, not at all. And quite a few others said, this is a little bit of an impact. And the top graphic shows a correlation between the several months, the last 6 months of 2014, when the gas prices were going down and our ridership, and we're not really seeing much of a change. So that's what I have for you today, and I am happy, and Shawm is happy as well, to take your questions and comments. And I thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. So anyone interested in asking a question, you know the drill. Put up your name tag, and since Fred was first, he's right on my left elbow. He goes first, and we'll go around this way.
So,
I'm sorry, before you start, and just because this, there's always the chance, there's often the outcome that we have far more questions than we have time. If we can limit it to just a question, your most pressing question.
And if you wouldn't mind just giving me your name, because I haven't met each one of you yet, I would love to just make sure I've got a name and a face. Fred Walker. Thank you.
Fred Walker. So I had to ask this question because I didn't, on page 14, the slide, could you explain what the numbers are? Because I couldn't really get high. I heard what you said, but I didn't get that out of this.
Page 14 is the gas prices slide? Ah, sure. The page numbers are.
What does one mean?
So we're comparing ridership decline, ridership behavior against a normalized average day in May. And then moving forward, taking a look at the overall ridership and whether or not it's been flat, declining, or increasing. So from that 100% day, how has ridership changed from that point in time, which is May 6th, 2014? Do we have, in percentage terms, more or greater or fewer riders from that day going forward? So it's not as if we have one rider, but if that was 100% day, is the following month 101%, and in which case you'd have 1 point, whatever it is. You can see as we get into the August months, that's typically a month where we see lots of vacations, so it's only going to be, in this case, around 90% of the ridership we experienced in May. May is our sort of normal, no cherry blossoms, no...
Okay, I got it. So now I want to ask my actual question.
Okay, good.
So this is... I mean, because what I didn't get was how you were decide. I don't get the how you call this negative impact. It's just who's riding, right?
So arguably, when you take a look at those who would take the blue line, and for whom there is almost a Sophie's choice: do I transfer at L'Enfant and take a trip to a point in the core, or do I stay on the blue and wait for that next train? What's my travel time? And there are a pair, there's two station pairs, three station pairs for whom, depending on the time of day, that travel time is in actuality, because of the train scheduling, longer than an equivalent travel switch to yellow transfer and then exit the station. And so for those patrons, we wanted to know, are those patrons leaving the system? And if they're leaving the system, or if they're not riding, are they not riding at a rate that is greater or less than the rest of the system performance? And I think what this says is that we see the same data that you do in the vital signs, and we're concerned. It's not as if the data tells us that there are those negatively impacted riders that are leaving the system at a greater rate than the rest of the overall system performance.
I don't get that from this.
Okay.
I mean, we take it offline, but I don't see that from here.
Maybe I can try as far as he's looking at any of the blue line riders that were negatively impacted by the change and that they had longer waits. Are they more likely to leave because they were negatively impacted?
Yeah, I'd like to see the math that proves that, that's all.
Okay.
Okay. The line chart would correspond to an Excel table, and we can give you the Excel table that will show you the same thing.
I know, but we'll take it offline. There's way a ton of assumptions there. I think you could interpret this any number of ways.
Okay. I mean, all we're doing is showing scheduled travel time. So it's not consumer research. It's what does the schedule produce a less optimal trip based upon the actual potential to take the trip? And for those people that take that trip regularly, do we see that trip frequency drop off the map at a rate that's greater than the other trips that we did see decline during the year?
Okay. I understand what you just said. I understand what you're concluding. I don't get that that's the only way this data comes that way.
If you have a suggestion for how you'd like us to cut the data, then I'm happy to take the
suggestion.
We'll
just have to take, there's a whole mess of people who don't want to ask questions. We'll just stop.
Okay. Sir, or I'm not sure who's next.
We'll go over this way. Bob, go ahead.
This is not a blue line question. This is a silver line question.
Great.
How do you explain the dramatic underestimation of overestimation of the number of riders in the Silver Line? Were there any demographic changes in no. Northern Virginia that would explain that?
No. So a couple things. First of all, I would put up the estimates of Silver Line ridership against the ICC and against the hot lanes any day of the week and take it to the bank. So we are doing much better than any of the major capital projects that have had forecasted investments and forecasted ridership in the region. That being said, the big bogey in the Silver Line was that back in 2004, the economy was humming along. There was an estimate for the amount of development that would have taken place in Tyson's Corner by 2008, 2009 that still hasn't materialized. And so when we see right now, a lot of that development, when the economy tanked in 08, either the projects went into bankruptcy or they went and they got kicked back 3-4 years until they could get refinanced, and they're now under construction. So when you think about the fact that our ridership is directly related to what is at or near those stations, and the stuff that in 2004 was projected to be built still isn't there, that is, in one aspect, the primary cause of the lag. So as those projects that developers had promised would be in place by 2009, as they finally get under construction now in 2015, those interim stations will pick up.
I have other questions, but I'll.
Hi, Avani Gala. I'm an Arlington writer. I have one statement and a question. So my statement is that I think it's the second full page. There is information about the number of riders on the Silver Line. I think that it would be very helpful for us to have the same information for the Blue Line, and I think it would also help and kind of the redirecting of times as you work through that.
So can I just ask for a clarification of your statement? You'd
yes.
like to have the boardings for the different stations on the blue line?
No, it's their ridership compared to projections. I'm not concerned about the projections, but the
actual
number of people riding.
Sure. That's an easy thing to be able to produce.
Okay.
Sure.
And then my question is on the 2014 vital signs passengers per car. How are those numbers generated? They seem low to me. I usually get on at Roslyn, and I've never had a car where I could sit down in the morning.
I'm going to field this. So the Office of the Chief Performance Officer constructs the vital signs, and if Rick is here and wants to speak to it directly, but if not, I'll answer it for him. There is, in the railroad industry, a methodology for counting passengers per car, and like it or not, it is, in this country at least, a manual process. And so several times per month, there are teams of car counters that go out to the max load points and literally stand on the platforms. And they are trained to estimate the car loads for each car in a consist. And they report back into the vital signs report the estimated load on those cars as averaged throughout the hour. And that then gets reported into vital signs. It's not that different from how other systems, at least domestically, do count rail car loads. We can debate whether or not there's better ways to do it globally. Indeed, there are. But that's not what we do, nor other systems in this country do. And I will say that there are pros and cons to that method. One of the pros is that it's the only way that we know of that we can get a relevant indicator of the distribution of the load within the different cars in a consist. So we can mathematically tell you whether an 8-car train or a 6-car train has 1,000 people or 600 people or 400 people, but I have no way mathematically of telling you whether they're all clumped into the middle cars or distributed at the ends. The car counters give us that ability to do that. And actually what they're finding, there's a board presentation that was made on this methodology, I believe in September, in which they showed what we're finding is that there's actually a lot of clumping that takes place within the consists. The disadvantage, of course, is that if the average is telling us that we're, over the course of an hour, above 100 PPC, at any one point in time, someone probably experiences a crowding level that's far in excess of 100. And we recognize that. And it is, you know, one of the things that we're trying to resolve from a measuring standpoint, is there a technology that can do it better? Is there some sort of, you know, weight sensor on the cars that can help us do it better? Can we do it better hourly? My team right now is working hard to develop a tool that could let us measure it out at the 15-minute interval as opposed to the hour interval. But we're not there right now. But that's how that's measured. I can direct you to the board presentation on this. I believe it was September of last year. I can confirm that.
Ryan Nalty with the District of Columbia. I'm looking at page number 12, the schedule shifts to accommodate silver, and it basically breaks down AM, midday, PM rush, evening, late. Some of them are very reputable, like together. What I'm wondering is on the AM and PM shift are basically orange, silver, yellow, and green all sitting at 6 minutes. Is that the general consensus that, and silver is going to continue to stay around 6 minutes, I'm assuming, even with the second level expansion out to Dulles, or is that going to be a kind of what's happening with the orange line, that the farther out from the District of Columbia, the kind of longer the trains will be delayed at that point?
No, the operating plan right now does call for the continuation of the 6 minutes on silver, even with phase two.
Okay. And then, so what I'm trying to figure out is then you said there's the choke point of the Potomac tunnel, which can only handle 26 trains an hour. How are we going to solve some of the blue line problem when we can't have less silver line trains apparently, and we can't have less orange line trains? It seems like the math sort of says then blue line's not going to have any ability for more trains or less than 12 minutes of delay. Is that sort of what holds out right now?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So within planning, when I got here, one thing we recognized immediately was that is an operational constraint. So a few years before we opened the Silver Line, within my office, we put into the authority strategic plan the direction for our jurisdictional partners as well as the board to fund a capital fix to the Blue Line that would essentially give it a stub station at Roslyn and allow us to add an additional 5 trains per hour onto the Blue Line. That's something that is not currently funded. We were optimistic about getting that funded and underway, but at this point in time, it is not a funded element of the strategic plan. In the long term, there will absolutely need to be a structural fix to the Roslyn portal. Narrow pipe, lot of trains. There's no other way around it. We are trying to look at some other, as Jennifer mentioned, some, if there's an operational solution, we'd like to bring that back to you in the summer. If there's another way to do it with physical infrastructure, we'd like to explore that as well. But there is no way to move more trains without building something that is inevitably expensive. Is it worth it? Absolutely. We have to be able to move the trains. We have to also have the funding to do it. Ma'am.
Hi, I'm Mary Ann Zimmerman from Montgomery County.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
I'm trying to understand, I guess, the reverse flow, and maybe it becomes obvious. You've got where the Silver Line people are going, but one of the reasons for the Silver Line was for people in Prince George's and other places, Montgomery and other places, to be able to come. And I'm assuming they might also go to Arlington. The reverse flows, do they make any difference, or how do you account for them in this data?
Absolutely. One of the beauties of what's taking place now is we finally have built a connection that helps bridge that east-west divide. And somewhere between 10% and 13% of the patrons that board the Silver Line at Largo in the morning, or in Prince George's County, I'm sorry, not just Largo, actually alight the system or get off the trains in Tysons. And so what before may have been a punishingly long commute along the Beltway is now a very comfortable train ride, which is a wonderful thing for those who want to access better employment. I can't quote the rest of the stats off the top of my head, but if you go to our blog, planetmetro.com, and search Silver, you'll see that we profiled. You can actually click around on the map and say, if you boarded Silver Line here, where are you going? The other interesting aspect about that is that we now see at the Tyson stops off-peak ridership or off-peak exits and activity that is in excess of weekdays. So people are using it for leisure. One of the fascinating things is that unlike the rest of the system, which showed significant decreases year over year in ridership on the day after Thanksgiving, which this year had been listed as a federal holiday, you had all these riders going to Tysons to go shopping. And so we had huge ridership exits at the Tyson stations, which is a good thing. So we're seeing that that's an off-peak powerhouse.
There's another, oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Will White from Prince George's County.
Hi, Will.
This is just a statement. I know there's been a lot of concern about where the ridership is going, what can we do to increase ridership. One of the things that I have noticed with the MARC train system that they've started doing on the weekends now is having a rail car that has, for bicycles alone, has, and I know this is, of course, we're going to have to take a survey and this won't happen overnight. Has anyone looked at that being an option for Metro? Because, of course, during off-peak times, people take their cycles, but during peak times, a lot of people are riding to work anyway. So if it would be an option for them to take their bikes onto the rails and then get to their destination and then ride from, even further destination from the Metro system, that could be a big option. So I don't know if it was something that anybody even tossed out, but I think it's a great idea.
We hear it all the time. So who in this room is familiar, or I would say, who's unfamiliar with our bicycle policy on Metro Rail? Okay, so we are, of course, fans of as many modes of access as possible. And bicycles are, in fact, allowed on Metro Rail. Now, during peak hours, we do restrict bicycles to those that are the folding variety. And the reason for that is because the trains are so packed and the stations are so packed, and really also the vertical transportation units. We want to make sure that those who are most in need of those vertical transportation units, elevators and escalators, who are in the disability population, we want those facilities free for those passengers, especially in the peak. In the off-peak hour, have at it. We try and make sure you don't use the first or last car of the trains. That's an improvement. The previous policy had it such that you could only bring a folding bicycle onto Metro Rail if it was in a case or something. I think we got rid of that so you can fold it up. There are a variety of constraints here. Some people have suggested that if you're riding in the off-peak direction, well, why can't you bring your bike on because the train's going to be empty? And the simple answer is that it's no way for us to enforce that. I don't have the capacity to deploy a station manager to follow you onto the train and say, no, you're going to Greenbelt. You said you're going to Greenbelt, but you're not. You're going downtown. It doesn't work that way. Until we are comfortable, and people have pointed to BART and said, well, BART allows you to bring the bikes on the trains. Well, BART has about 50% of our peak hour loads that we do with the same type of technology. So roomier trains, less congestion. I think in the near term, we are aggressively partnering with bike share alternatives like Capital Bike Share and making sure that those facilities are located at or near Metrorail properties. I know that we're trying to work with them to make sure that some of the signage is integrated so that when you're entering or exiting a station, you can know where a cabbie location is. Now, some people are in love with their bicycles. They bought their bicycle. It's their baby. They only want to ride their bicycle. Their seat is special. And I think that's where we run into some friction because it's not possible to accommodate the crowding we have on the system today and people's predilections for their own personal bicycles.
But remember, I also mentioned having a specific car just for bikes. So, you know, survey.
I mean, I think it's an interesting idea. If we had an unlimited amount of cars, we could do it. I love the idea of finding ways to make it easier for people to use bicycles on the system. We do a lot of things at the stations areas, like building those bike channels up and down the stairs. For those of you who do find stairs out near rail stations, we put a lot of bike channels in so you can walk your bikes up without having to go ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk up the stairs. New secure bike lockers, and we're trying to make sure they're better advertised. You may have seen at some of the rail stations those large boxes, and you're wondering, what is that? Now they say, rent me, I'm a bike locker, and that's a good thing. Some of the bike cage facilities that we've deployed, and then at Wheelie Avenue, which is a very, very sophisticated bike storage facility there. If you haven't been out there to see how they do the storage, I recommend going and checking it out. It's really quite nice.
Ben Chow from At Large. Just live in D.C. I just want to point out one thing and another question. It's interesting because if this survey, first of all, can we see the survey and how, you've surveyed 3,000 people, which is fantastic, but can we see the actual survey? Just a question there that you guys put out. It seems like, favorability has been increasing over time.
Can you tell us where you are?
Oh, this last survey on favorability. Yeah, sorry.
The weird slide that I stole.
It seems like since favorability has increased, common knowledge would be, oh, you know, I'd probably want to ride the rail more often. Yet, all of your theories, like, there must be something significantly at work because, I mean, if you're not hitting your projections, there's something wrong, and the fact that ridership has decreased, as you guys have shown in your line graph, there's something really big at work. And so it'd be interesting to see if there would be more studies to see what actually is going on. What is that existential thing that is really hitting your ridership overall? But my question is, for those of us who don't ride the Blue or Silver Line, could we also see more data on terms of where other lines, people who start on different lines, where they're going to go?
Yes. So
based on this graph.
Yes. So Jennifer, let's do this. I think that we can have Justin put together a tableau on that very easily. It may actually be on there right now, but if it's not, I'll go scan and we'll see. We may have a clickable map on Planet that allows you to click on the point of entry and see where the rider's going. If it's not there, it's easy to toss up there. We can make that happen. As far as, I would probably like to call your attention to the slide that says general trends in rail ridership, because it's important to factor in a few key pieces here. Jennifer mentioned this in her presentation, and I will I'll sound the horn for work well done. Her team has been able to isolate with fair level of conclusivity that in 2014, when we take a look at the rail ridership trends, we were ticking up. We're from 2008 was our high point, and we fell off a few percentage points per year until 2011 and ticked back up. 2011, 2014, we've been ticking up. 2014 was a tough year. It was actually a downward year. And all the math says that the ridership we lost was almost entirely related to those riders who are our longest distance riders who used to use the 100% federal benefit for their trip, and they chose to make other trip choices. Eliminate those riders from the math, and our background ridership is up 2%. So it's our current thinking that that impact to ridership has been felt. The system has weathered that, and now with the endogenous growth in household and jobs that are taking place, the system will begin to return to its traditional growth rate, which has been anywhere between 1.5% over the past 10 years and 3% per year over the past, over the 10 years prior. So this chart suggests that perhaps we've turned that corner and we're going back to a more normalized rate of growth. We'll have to see where the year ends up. There's one question there. Has the name tag is up?
Catherine, just a quick question about the passenger Picard loadings. How do these blue and orange numbers compare to the silver line at the same stations?
They're higher. The blue line is the blue line's very crowded, and it's very crowded at those max load points. We're not going to sugarcoat that. It's a very crowded segment, and it's something that we'd like to be able to address.
I suggest that you just the vital signs report is up on our metro.com, and I encourage you to take a look at it. It's not very long. It's not exhaustive, and there's a lot more in there.
If you want me to go through the numbers with you in this room, I certainly can. I brought it with me.
Cool.
Okay. So let's look at November numbers. So that Roslyn segment in the AM rush, the blue line, was an average of 107 persons per car. And the 107, I apologize. And then on orange at Courthouse, that equivalent number was 105. And on silver at Roslyn, that number is 92. And so it's almost this knife's edge question. What's the real difference between 92 and 105? Well, a lot if you're in 105. And that was AM rush. In the PM rush hour, the blue line at Roslyn was 100. At Foggy Bottom, it was 106. In the PM rush hour, silver had a much lower PPC. We have more choices coming in as well because you can interline there. So silver at Foggy Bottom, which was the max load, and the PM rush was 85, and orange was 90, so or 89, I apologize. So no bones about it, blue line's very crowded. And it's a question of degree. It is 89 per persons per car arguably much, much less crowded than 92 persons per car, and is that much, much less crowded than 102 persons per car? These are the kind of decisions that we're wrestling with internally, and how do you best maximize the fleet and throughput to accommodate those levels of crowding?
Yes, I'm Lorraine Silva, representing Arlington.
Hi.
Specifically South Arlington, i.e. Pentagon City. And I want to address what in the public comment was just as overcrowding. When Metro decided to run three lines through the downtown area, through the core, and decided to take trains away from the blue line, they didn't take into consideration, or if they did, they didn't think this straight. What happens when you have the switch problems or the broken down trains or the sick passengers? Because the ones that start waiting over half an hour waits are the people in the blue line. And that is not considered in any of these nice numbers. That has to be taken into consideration, because half an hour wait for a train, whether for whatever conditions, it's way too much. And paying rush hour fares and you have to wait over half an hour for a train, that's outrageous.
I agree that the wait is too much. I don't think anyone here is thrilled about some of the waits that our customers are experiencing. But I appreciate you bringing that to our attention again.
Now, the chairperson about to ask you what help you need from us. I want to know if you thought about asking us to do more close-up survey, quote, which may help you to survey maybe every other time to get a near accurate number of people on the train during the rush hour. Have you thought about that? For example, maybe I can pick the day that you want me to go on the train to do the survey for your office.
I don't think in our wildest dreams we thought people would volunteer to do that. Can I say thank you for the suggestion, and we will certainly consider whether or not there's a way for the general public to help us monitor trains. I think it's interesting. It's a very interesting idea. How would I communicate back how we are fielding these ideas, Barbara, through you? Through James. Thank you, James. It's a really interesting idea. A couple ideas.
I'm going to take my turn, and then we're going to give some opportunity for public commenters to ask or either comment or ask questions. I actually don't have a question. And by the way, Anna May, I'm from Alexandria. Catherine asked one of mine, was to get also the Silver Line numbers on the passengers per car. Another thing I think that would be helpful is that even though averages are a very meaningful number, I think there are times where it would be also good to see the ranges, because that means every time, if it's 107 on the average, that means if there's ever one with 87, there's probably one with 127 or worse. If you get one that happens to come along at the start of rush hour or something that's only half full, there's one where the people are getting turned away and or getting pushed on. And so I think that would be a meaningful thing to report as well, if it's available. I presume if you're calculating an average, you have all the number range of what that is. I'm not saying as a universal thing that you do all the time, but I think as these discussions occur, I think that's informative.
So if I share with you that I completely agree with you and we are very close to having a better reporting tool, but it's not there yet, it's not calibrated yet, it's something that drives me crazy. I agree with you. And yeah. The other thing which we'd like to be able to report out is actual platform crowding, because it's one thing to report out that the train is crowded, but let's say that folks felt that the train was too packed and they chose not to get on, mm-hmm. and so the platform becomes more crowded and they miss the train. The reporting tools we're developing now are much more sophisticated. They're not yet ready for prime time. We're just in the process of getting them up to the point where we can test them. But I'm hopeful that in the coming year we'll be able to have something that not only tells you train crowding. I won't be able to tell you if you're more crowded in the first or sixth car, but at least the train, as well as platform level crowding, and then whether or not the crowding led to individuals missing trains. That's 12 months or so out. I agree with you.
Okay, and the other idea, I think may have also been brought up, but I really liked the picture of where the people are going from the Silver Line. And I think that would be really helpful for me to see that for the Blue Line riders, especially the Virginia ones that are starting in Springfield, starting in Huntington, there's a Blue Line Rush Plus that's in Huntington, I believe, as well, but that to know where they're going, because that would probably you may already have that, answer the question of why aren't they switching to yellow. I'm one of the lucky ones who can. I'm kind of in the middle. But if somebody's starting in Springfield and they're going to Falston, you know, they're never gonna switch. So I think that would be helpful.
I know we did put that exact slide up on Planet last year about this time. We can unearth it and get it again. But
okay.
It breaks down the originations and then where
great.
You're going, where you're diverting.
That'd be great.
We'll break it out again.
Okay, I'd like to open up to public commenters. Again, I'll give you a minute to think about how you want to do this. Who would like to speak from the public comment? Raise your hand if you're interested in doing it at some point. We've got four of you. Okay, so yeah, if you could have a minute, why don't we just start at this side and go around. Thank you.
You need to go to the mic or just?
I think you need to go to the mic because of the recording. You can go to the closest mic if you'd like.
So thank you very much for sharing all this with us. I think it's very interesting.
You wanted to go up there? Okay.
Go up here. It's a public comment.
If you want to move up to that area, you'll be ready.
So I'm Jeff Larimore from Alexandria. So thank you very much for all this information. I think it's really helpful. I just had one quick clarification and then a question for you. The clarification is you said that you're going to start doing 8-car trains on the Blue Line. I'm curious when that's going to begin, or all 8-car trains. So I was curious when that was going to start. And then the question that I had was you said, sort of looking at sort of slides 12 and 13, advertising 6 minutes on every line except for the Blue Line and the Red Line. But if you look at slide 13, the 6 minutes and 12 minutes is actually 25 cars per hour, not 26. And you're giving that extra car to Orange Line. So theoretically, you could still be hitting that 6 minute that you're advertising and giving that one extra car to Silver.
Great question.
To Blue.
So just to clarify, we're doing 8-car trains in the peak. Mm-hmm. And so whether or not what happens over the course of the next year as we try to implement 8-car train service is still a matter of discussion, but the statement I want to make sure we're clear about is that in the peak hour, we're trying to make sure those Blue Line trains are 8-car trains. I don't have a date for you right now, I'm sorry. And you're absolutely right. So we've been talking about this portal constraint of 26 train car sets per hour, which is an operational maximum. And I'll be perfectly honest, we don't always hit that operational maximum because of other bottlenecks that take place in the system. What scheduling likes to do is they like to send one other train car set through with what they call a tripper that allows them to essentially stage and have fleet in different parts of the system ready for the backhaul. So if you've ever been in the system where you've seen a train car set come through, it says no passengers, we're not delivering bicycles, but that train car set is being pre-positioned somewhere else so that it can begin revenue service. Right now, I don't know of a solution that allows us to operate and take away the tripper, but I think it's something that the team is exploring as well. But that's what gets us to 26. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Joshua, and I heard you said I heard you said that the Silver Line is operating on 60% projection right now, and you also said that some of the projects that you guys estimated to start in 2009 and 2008 had not started yet, and you guys are still waiting for those projects to start. My question is, have you guys considered increasing the headways for Silver Line trains and putting some of those trains on the Blue Line, especially coming from Franconia, for now, at least, until, I guess, the Silver Line commuters start complaining. And then I guess you guys could figure something out then, because right now, every time I'm on Twitter, it's always Blue Line riders are always complaining. And I've ridden the Silver Line maybe once or twice, and it's always empty. So, you know, that's something you guys, I think you guys should maybe consider for now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Colin Rouge again. So I just want to thank you for this. It's been very useful.
Thank Jennifer. And
so I've got a couple of questions. One is, can we get more of this data, more of this detailed data made publicly available more regularly? I think it would be great. The public to be able to access this.
How many of you have looked at Planet Metro before? Okay, you would be well advised to, you know, every, and I'm not saying that, and we'll be happy to give you, and we have a whole list today of things that we're going to make available to you, but I encourage you to look at that early and often, because a lot of what you saw today, our staff actually produced and have made available on Planet Metro, and it's a part of our goal to be more transparent and to make data more available so that people can explain the things that they're experiencing every day. And then ask us better questions, and you're asking great questions. These are all excellent questions.
Wonderful.
Today. So I'm going to encourage that, and you know, we will go back
sure.
with more.
Great, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm also wondering about rail incidents on different lines, specifically the Blue Line. And I think it would be interesting to see if there are more, for example, door incidents on the Blue Line compared to other lines as a result of crowding. And so, I mean, you know, what I see on Twitter is, like, very vague. So mm-hmm. equipment problem, train malfunction. It'd be great to have more detailed information about exactly what is causing trains to become disabled and also whether that's specific to certain lines.
Okay. I can answer some of that. Some of that information we can try and bring back and at least dissect whether or not it was a train car related issue, and that's, I know that we do report that back out in board meetings from time to time, and I don't know when the last time we've brought that out, but we're one of the reasons that we're so aggressive about replacing the older train cars is that we've noticed that a huge portion of these issues are related to the 5000 series cars, and very problematic. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what it is that we can bring out and put out in the open of that material. It's not part of my shop, but we can take a look and see if it's publicly releasable.
Well, I mean, should all really be publicly releasable since it's a public agency?
No, absolutely. but what I can do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. One more.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Tom Spinsick. I live in Alexandria. I'd like to thank all of y'all for coming out and making all this data available. I appreciate that. Be kind of all over the place for a second. Jeff, I believe, I can tell you that I got on an 8-car Blue Line train this morning. So I think Metro, if they're not doing it all across the board, they've already started. Yeah.
Peak.
Okay. B, I submit to alleviate some of the train, the people crowding the train per car. Maybe a more low-tech solution, such as encouraging people to get on the front car, what I kind of deliberately call the suicide train ever since the 2009 crash. That's the only one that I ride in, and I can generally get a seat. And I guess my third point, question, is with the Braddock Road Metro, or rather Potomac Yard Metro, Alexandria's been pushing that, and I think it's going to come out in about 17, 18 from what I hear. Does Metro have any plans on deck to keep pace with that, the growth from people getting on the Potomac Yard?
So let's do the questions in reverse order. We've just constructed, and actually this will be on Planet on Tuesday, April 7th, but we've just put forth what we call a capital needs early warning system. And it's a way that we can monitor actual development projects as they go into the construction pipeline so we can alert our staff about additional capital needs that need to be made, additional escalators, elevators, inside station capacity, because a lot of times the projections that come out from the planning offices are sort of wild guesses. And what we see from the bricks and mortar is actual stuff. So the answer to your last question is absolutely yes. Regarding the monitoring, what was your suggestion for the passengers per car monitoring tool?
Suggested maybe spacing it out. I notice a lot of people tend to pool in the middle of the cars, like around like where the escalators drop them off. And, you know, maybe if perhaps the station managers could say, you know, if you don't want to get into a train that's excessively crowded, you know, like a sardine train, as I've taken to calling them, you know, maybe move up a little bit farther. If you're in a position to do so, maybe, you know, walk up the platform a little bit more. I realize not everybody can do that. Not everybody's willing. But it certainly seems to have worked for me. I can sometimes get a seat in the mornings.
I know some of the train operators are more diligent about encouraging our patrons on the platform to spread out, especially when they are operating in all an A-car consist.
That's true. This guy in the red line I take when I get to my girlfriend's place, he's great.
Yeah? Well, if you can drop a little blue comment card in with the station manager after you depart so we can let them know. There's one tool that at Metro, we don't create apps, and I don't endorse anyone to use this, but one thing which does help There's one app out there which does allow you to track real-time train arrival and departure information. It's not ours, so I have to put my non-Metro, my citizen hat on. It's called Metro Minder. And if you are on the system and you're wondering, do I transfer, do I not transfer, I'm going to go, and maybe do I wait for the next Blue Line train, or do I decide to go over to L'Enfant and transfer to Yellow? I don't know how Yellow's doing today. You can actually look at the system performance at the line level and find out that, the Yellow Line lane is doing great in the direction of Fort Totten, except for at Shaw, where it seems to be backed up. So it looks like I'll be okay. And it's real time. So just a suggestion for the way the developer world. What we do on our end is we make all the data available for the developers to tackle that stuff. So that's another tool that's available to folks.
Yeah, MetroMinder is actually great. That's in large part how I determine whether or not I'm going to chance it on the Blue Line to get to my transfer point in Rawlinson to get back to courthouse, or if I'm going to go all the way around through D.C. and hop the Yellow Line.
Thank you.
It's a good tool.
Thank you. I'm going to give one more speaker a chance because Jeremiah did not have a question on the first go-around, so he gets a turn.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm Jeremiah Bush. I represent Fairfax County.
Jeremiah.
I ride the Orange Line normally from Vienna, but my question is regarding the scheduled shifts, the headways versus what actually is happening. So, you know, the airlines kind of have a scorecard about percentage of on-time arrivals versus departures. Is there a way we can have something that shows the lines as far as, or even stations, as far as what is actually the headway, the actual wait time, 6 minutes, 12 minutes versus what is forecast?
So here's the note, what the team is doing. Again, this is Jennifer's team, but what they've been able to put together is it's not ready for prime time yet, okay? It's in the works, but we feel like it's been tested to the point where now it's being explored internally for something that might go into next year's vital signs. So this is all stuff that we're working on. But one idea that we had was to track individuals tap in and tap out to the system and to establish, in a sense, an average travel time for particular trip sets, and then to report out the extent to which individual trips were one standard deviation or more from the normalized average trip time, and have that as a function of sort of the customer-facing on-time performance, and that can be reported up by trip. So if I'm a, I'm a Forest Glen to Judiciary Square commuter, and that trip, 32-minute on-the-rail trip. If I was a 37-minute trip, it's fine, I can deal with that. If it's a 43-minute trip, hey, I'm late. How many times did that happen? So all this is a long-winded way of saying it's not easy to report that stuff out in a way that's actually meaningful, but I think we have a customer solution that you probably should see in the next year's vital signs.
And thank you, both of you, Sham and Jennifer. It's been great hearing from you and getting the numbers and things that are in the works, knowing about those. So what I'd like to propose is that he already through the minutes does capture the suggestions or the questions, and we can assemble those. And also, we will take questions. We'll give a 1 week to all of the members to, if they didn't get their chance and they really had a lot more questions or comments, we'll take those to James. And then, James, if you want to, the customer committee can then kind of sort through all the data that you've gotten, all the questions and comments, and we can figure out how to prepare that and provide it. We probably will get two kinds, things that are about the data itself, and suggestions for things that would help, but also just Blue Line ideas too, which may be things that more appropriately are forwarded to others, I would think. But anyway, thank you again for being here. Appreciate it. It was very informative.
Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our pleasure.
On to committee reports.
What happened to the other one? You already skipped over?
Did I?
Oh, never mind.
Item number 6 on the agenda. Committee reports. So there is, I presume, I haven't looked through the whole stack, the chair, the report that I gave to the board for the month of March. I won't go through any of that. I spoke at the board meeting again. I have a few updates from, I've been starting to go to both the second Thursday and the fourth Thursday of every month. There are board committee meetings. I've been going to those, not all of them, but most of them that seem relevant to rider issues. And I know there's hundreds of pages each of those days of documents, and so it's kind of like I go so you all don't have to, and you don't have to read all of it, and I try to pick out some things that I think you'd be especially interested in. So hopefully I can do that. As we heard earlier, the first Blue Line, the first new 7000 series car, it's exciting that it's going to be given to the Blue Line. And the thing that's different about it is that right now, as you may know, we have a mix of the series within one train that arrives at a station. It may have some 5000s and a 1000, whatever. But the 7s are built to go together, and so it will be 8 cars of the 7000 series that will be starting. I can't remember the date. It's somewhere in April, and I'm 14th. Yeah, I've got it on my calendar, so I'm going to be there when it starts. it's like, 7:30 or 7 or something. 7 a.m., yeah. I'll be there. As I think he may have also mentioned, there was an approval at one of the March meetings of the Potomac Yard Station, Metro Station. And I wasn't aware that this is only the second time in the history of WMATA that there'll be an infill station. In other words, it's not extending the end of the line. It's something that's going in between stations. And so the Potomac Yard line, if you're not familiar with that area, it is Alexandria. And it's a long highway one, and it will be between, I believe, Braddock and, is it between Braddock and Reagan? I'm not sure. Is that what I did to get that right? Okay. I know where to find it. I just don't know what's between it. Anyway. People are really excited about it, but it does beg the question that will also be blue and yellow at that point, because Braddock and Crystal City are both blue and yellow. So if we get more riders because of that, that will also put a little bit of weight on the blue and yellow lines. The customer service meeting had some interesting things I thought you would like to hear about. They had a Metro Access Study update, and I realize AAC is probably much more deeply involved in listening and hearing about that. But what they talked about, they've done a real study of the use of and need for something like Metro Access, the paratransit service, and I think it's not any surprise to know that the expectation is that the need is never going to go down. It's only going to go up. Well, because as more and more, as the population ages, there'll be more people, and the more there are, the more likely there are to be some that are disabled that need the assistance of this. So they are really examining what all the options are to provide that service going forward, or to look at the options for providing that. You may have heard about or seen releases about the new safety for the employees. I hadn't thought about it, but there are people who evade fares and they jump through the turnstiles or whatever, and the station managers have frequently had, well, I wouldn't say frequently, but enough times that you don't really like it, that they've been physically abused and in one case stabbed trying to get somebody to pay a fare. And so there is a campaign that's beginning to address that and have some assistance of police and other enforcement. So it's something that the employees really want as a safety for their own sake in the safety culture. Patrick said some nice things about the RAC and the PPP committee, so anyone on that group, about the joint session you had on priority seating. And then also the once a quarter, so every 3 months, the leadership team of the RAC meets with the executive board members, which is just the top four leading people from the board. And we had a, Bob and I were able to attend. Fred and Dan were out of town, but we shared with them the work plan. I can't remember if we have, if I remembered to get that in the packet though, did we? Did we put the executive board document in the packet? Okay, we'll get that to you. It was just a restatement. We collected up all of the items that the various committees said they wanted to work on, and we presented that to them. Basic feedback was, that's an awful lot of stuff, but we have a lot of people interested in a lot of things. So it was a good discussion. We had a good conversation about our role and what they look for from us, and a continuation of what Mr. Downey had said and we talked about when he was here. So we had that meeting, and they had no objection. Not that we were looking or expecting one, but they liked our plan and in terms of the things that we want to address. So I think that's it for chair reports. Yes. Oh, yes, thank you. I did go to that, the safety and security, and there was an update from, you know, they had, I guess, in the February timeframe, which was not long after the January incident, there were 10 action items that operations had set that they wanted to take care of immediately of things that they realized or learned or had heard from their preliminary investigation. And so they made a great deal of progress on those. They've completed everything that was a one-time completion thing. There are some pieces of it that were ongoing things that they're going to be repeating over time. But they have been able to do all of the things that they said they would do in a short period of time. Oh, yes. Okay. So how many of you have seen the new video that's available for emergency? Okay. I figured even if all but one of you said you'd seen it, I was going to show it anyway. at the customer service meeting, Lynn Bowersox debuted this to a committee at Safety and Security. I'm glad to hear that they did a survey of a lot of people that were Yellow Line riders, or I think maybe beyond the Yellow Line riders too, but after the incident, and asking them about what kind of information they wanted and how did they want to see it. And a lot of it was for, I want a video, I want something I can look up on the computer. So they have put together a video. It's going to be shown every TV station in the area. We'll be airing it as a public service announcement. There will also be buying time to have it play additional times and looking at various ways that they can get it out to the people so they can see it. So James has reminded me that I asked him to be ready and poised to show it to all of us. I think it's, is it 3 minutes? Something like that? Around that? Okay, so this is the new WMATA version of when you board the aircraft and you get a safety.
I'm Metro Transit Police Chief Ron Pavlik, and I'm Prince George's County Fire Chief Mark Bayshore, Chairman of the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments Fire Chiefs. We work together every day, along with every police officer, firefighter, emergency responder in our networks, to keep you safe while riding Metro.
In the event of an emergency on a Metro train, please know that our teams are working hard to reach you as quickly as possible.
This short video will show what steps you can take to protect yourself and ensure effective coordination with our first responders.
We are honored by the trust you place in us every day, and we will continue working together to improve safety for all Metro riders.
Welcome aboard Metrorail, and thanks for riding with us. Our first priority is your safety, so let's take a minute to talk about what you should do if there's an emergency involving fire or smoke. Metrorail trains are powered by a strong electrical current transmitted through the third rail. As a result, it's not uncommon to see electrical arcing and small amounts of smoke coming from the track bed. But if you see fire or a large amount of smoke, it's time to act. If you're in a station, move away from the platform and begin walking to the nearest exit. Metro employees and emergency personnel will tell you when it's safe to return. If you're on board a train, notify the operator using the intercom located at either end of the rail car. Push and release the red button once, wait for the operator to respond, and begin to speak. Don't hold down the red button. This prevents the operator from hearing you. Now follow the operator's instructions and remain calm. Your train operator is in constant contact with Metro's Rail Operations Control Center and will provide riders with ongoing updates on the emergency response. Unless you are in immediate danger, you are safest staying inside the train. If necessary, when the train is stopped, you can use the end doors to move to another car in the train. If you must evacuate the train, listen to the instructions provided by the train operator or emergency responders. There are 6 doors on each Metro Rail car, 3 on each side. Emergency exits are located in the center of each rail car and are clearly marked with an exit sign. To open an emergency door, lift the emergency door release cover. A wire will break away, pull down the red handle, and slide the left door panel open. Be sure to open the door on the correct side of the train. Inside a tunnel, you'll want to exit on the side with the lights. At ground level, exit on the right side when facing forward, and on elevated track, exit on the side with the raised walkway. Because the electric power reaches the train through the rail, it's very important to wait for emergency personnel to help you evacuate. Follow the first responder to the nearest station or emergency exit. Watch your step on the emergency walkway, and at all times avoid touching any part of the rail car below the car body, which could be electrified. For your safety, never cross over to the other track. Emergency information signs located next to the middle doors on every rail car serve as a daily reminder of these tips and a guide for passengers during an emergency. On behalf of everyone at Metro, thank you for paying attention to our safety presentation. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, James. I'm not sure how we do it. We don't have a lot of time to discuss it, but I would love to hear just your very basic gut reaction to what you saw, maybe even as a group say, you know, I mean, kind of what was your thought about it? Okay, we want to do it one by one. Okay, Fred.
Well, my first thought was it's better if everything was true that they said. There are several statements that are not true in that, and they need to fix them.
Okay. One thing I will say, what I do want to do is explain. When I first saw it, I was glad that we had done it. I was surprised we didn't know about it. And I asked that question, and James and Jennifer got information. And it was something that, you know, it was kind of, I've been there before myself where, you know, it's like you get a mandate and you've got to get it out and they have to do it fast. And so I think there was a lot of times if you're going to get input from a lot of people, it really slows the process down. So they tried to turn it around as quickly as they can. You can't do a video overnight. So, but what I would like to do is, like we did with the other topic, is to gather all the input that you have, whether you have a chance to do it tonight or just to send it in later. Because you can all see this right on the home page, front and center. Safety used to be, if you scrolled way down to the bottom, right now it's right, it's the first thing you'll see when you go to the home page. So you can view it on your own, and please feel free to provide any input that you want in a detailed way if you'd like to send it to James, and then again we will find a way to recap that and submit it, even if it's suggestions for the future or the next time or what else we might do. So if I would ask that in order to finish the meeting today by 8:30, I would like the comments to be brief. I'd like some general feedback that you have, but not a long dissertation on that. So yeah, I'm really anxious to know what you're referring to, so we'll get that.
You mean right now?
I'm anxious to. Ryan?
Okay, first of all, I thought it was a good way that they set it up. I'm a little apprehensive because actually I'm one of the people that does not own a TV. So getting access to it unless I go directly to the website is going to be very difficult. I've worked with airlines before on emergency procedures, and there's a reason they show it to you right as you're boarding the aircraft. Now, I know Metro can't show it, but I'd like to maybe see this in conjunction with simple advertisements or even just safety reminders inside Metro stations themselves, just to let people know that, you know, even something as simple as, you know, stay on the train, it's the safest place you can be in an emergency, you know, or something like that, that just lets people know in the context that they actually find themselves in an emergency, because even if I did see this on television, I'm not going to probably remember all the information 3 weeks after, and especially if there's, you know, smoke and fire involved.
Jeremiah, you were just in time. No? Okay. Will?
It says hold down the button.
Right, because most people that use air processors, they know hold the button.
Because I sit right across from it all the time, because I sit in a disabled seat, I think it does say don't hold it. But anyway, that's a good point. That's a good feedback. Check the next time. I'll check and provide that feedback. Patrick?
I didn't see anything in there on people with disabilities.
I that was the comment I had too. It didn't say.
And nothing about wheelchairs, you know, a situation like that.
Right.
So.
And it should be addressed just as on the airplane. It's you know, like if the oxygen comes down, what you do with people that aren't able to take care of it themselves. It's the same concept. I agree. Thank you. Ben? No?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's nothing also for about the intercom system or the operator, what they will be doing. People who don't speak English don't know how they're going to try and figure this out by themselves.
I failed to mention, by the way, that this is being produced. It's not the same as what you said, but you reminded me that it's being produced in both English and has been produced in both English and Spanish.
So there's only like about 98 other languages spoken.
Right. They're not done. This is the start. Catherine.
It seems to rely very heavily on the assumption that not only will the operator be providing clear instructions, but that they will be understandable in any given car, and that's a concerning assumption to me.
Yeah, and I had a conversation with, I think it was at the executive meeting, I talked about the challenge of the trains where if there's a 1000 series in it, it interrupts the communication between the cars, and I was told it's probably 3 years till we're totally out of that scenario, unfortunately, but it's going to gradually. No, but until we're totally out of the situation where there's some problem getting data in some of the trains, it's still going to be before it's all gone, before the problem. Yes, Deborah.
My hearing is not working, so forgive me if I'm repeating something that
somebody
already
brought
up. But one thing I've noticed throughout all of this, and that no children. There aren't any provisions for so people who have two kids with them or a stroller or whatever, and there's a lot of kids on Metro and on the buses. So
sure. Now, that's a good point. Thank you. Deborah.
This is a good video. I wonder if the mother is going to buy Mason left with airtime, will it be closed captioning for the deaf and hard?
Yes, I remember hearing about closed caption, and I don't remember what it was said, but I do believe it's available Do either of you two remember? I don't. Yeah, I believe that's being addressed, but I can't remember how. So we can find out. Anyway, thank you for. Patrick, did you want to say something else?
I just asked. I wouldn't be able to tell, but I see it wasn't captioned.
It was not. But I think I believe they have that capability. Yeah.
From YouTube? Okay.
Not from
our website. But do we know whether it's captioned on YouTube?
I believe YouTube does have captions.
They do.
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, these are all good questions.
Yeah, okay.
They're all good questions. So, once again, I think it's easy for, you know, I leave this meeting, and I think there are a couple of things I'm going to do. I'll send out, James or I will send out a reminder. Please remember to send us feedback on the data and for the blue line and so forth. And please remember to send in your suggestions about the video. Anything else I left out, James? Thank you. Thanks for taking care of me. Okay, on to other committee reports. Budget and finance.
For our next scheduled meeting, what we would do is we're going to establish a timeline regarding the fare simplification. I guess that will be our big focus over the next several months. One question I did have, Barbara, is what is the deadline? What is the board looking for as far as a date to have some type of proposal or recommendation in place?
I may have to double check that. I had Jennifer, do you know the annual timeline where they start working on the budget in, I think it was summer. I think it's summer. So I think he said we had a few months, but we can get clarification on that. As normal, you would do what your suggestion is and then run it to the whole rack.
Right, yes. Great. So that would be the plan for the next meeting that we have on the 14th would be to meet with my committee counterparts, and we would do is kind of decide what other agencies we want to benchmark against and then look at what fair certifications are in place. I think Fred suggested that, or that was already kind of in process, and so we would just continue that to hopefully have something in place before the summer when they begin looking at FY17.
And I'm pretty sure that if you as a committee wanted to have Mark or one of the other members of the finance team come, because they probably have a lot of that information, because we've had a brief discussion about it in the past, and I think they're well versed in that sort of thing. And
all right, so I will contact and get with James to see if we can arrange for that. Thank you.
Great. Sure, Patrick.
Just coming up, someone can correct me and give me better information. Isn't there a hearing coming up like April 8th?
April 7th,
in this building, right? Okay, so I know that, and from the budget side, I know that AAC is going to show up and just reiterate what we've been saying for 2 or 3 or 4 months now regarding, you know, fare increases and that sort of thing. I didn't know if BRAC wanted to do the same thing at that meeting on the 7th. I know they're not planning on doing it, but
yeah. What is the
until
the,
it
is date and time on that? The seventh.
Seventh.
We have
year?
The information. I think. Yeah.
Okay. I'll
probably when you have that, yeah, with your next weekly update, include even the hearing kinds of special occasions on the.
Yeah. What's that?
But I mean this Friday as well when you do the next one. Include any kind of the special dates, even though only some of us might be going to the various ones. Yeah, that would be great. That'd be helpful to remind us. Thanks, Patrick.
But if the RAC is going to do it, you would need to know because the 7th is next week.
Oh, you mean to take something there? Yeah. Figure out how to even do that. I think now mostly they pulled all the rider impact stuff out. There are very few things that were left in the budget, like parking at Minnesota, I believe. Minnesota Avenue.
They talked about one of the few changes is some of the parking lots that are not charging money, and so they want to make sure that all of them are charging money, and that they can possibly consider extending it so
that
weekend times they're not charging, consider weekend times start charging money if you want to park your car.
Not,
I was like,
not weekends, but it's extended weekends. The hours.
They extended the hours,
yeah.
I believe.
Yes,
and
yes.
And they have already done that, if I'm not mistaken. Or is that?
I don't think so. I think that has to go through the process. I believe that has to go through the process. So I think there ended up being three things. I think it's the parking, the extended of the Minnesota parking in particular, the extending of the hours, and there's something with it's more something in connection with one of the other transit companies.
The elimination of the TLC cars.
Which I'm not really familiar with, so I keep.
In the past 5 years, it's mainly Maryland.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. But I will make sure that you know exactly where the information is, and then we can also. If you want to have a representative speak as just a member of the public or as a representative of the REC, we'd have to figure out how to work that.
Okay, I'll just email you or contact.
Sure, we can talk about it. Okay, anything more from budget? Okay, how about customer service committee, Bob?
Well, the customer service committee has four priorities we're working on. Just quickly go through them with you. The first one is to work with WMATA to improve communications, to make communications clearer, more timely, and more accurate, specific as it relates to incidents, delays, safety concerns. That's priority number one. Priority number two is experience today, is to work on this Silver Line, Blue Line issue. And that was addressed to the full committee today, and we will continue working on it. The third issue, third priority has to do with station operations, and specifically the role of the station manager within stations, and try to figure out what that person's responsibility is and how they're doing, and make some recommendations, perhaps after we gather some information, to improve that person's responsibilities. And finally is to try to make better information available to bus riders in terms of schedule changes, maps, and signage. At our next meeting, which is on April 16th, we are going to have Rita Davis, who's the Director of Rail Station Operations, to help us to address that third priority. And we thought before we threw any bombs at her, we ought to hear them. Hear what they have to say and learn a little for ourselves about what that station operations situation is and how that station manager is supposed to operate.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions? I'll be happy to answer. And please, if you're interested in coming to hear Rita Davis on the 16th, whether you're on the customer service committee or not, feel free to attend.
Great. Ryan, do you have a report for the Triple P?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and give the report because Dan Turk is unfortunately not here this evening. On the 16th of March, the PPP committee did a joint meeting with the AAC. We met with a gentleman, and I apologize, we didn't write down his last name. Chris, what?
Phil Posner.
Was one of the other.
Yes, who does ADA compliance for the Metro. And we had kind of a good general discussion on both of the committees that we were representing about, discussions on how much was WMATA doing to fit ADA compliance, but also was there ways in which they could go above and beyond what was legally required of them and more into areas where it was sort of a necessary requirement. Some good discussion. I think one of the things that I particularly noticed is we're really trying to get an idea of where we're actually even starting from. There was some good discussion also about looking at what other metro systems around the United States and even globally were doing. All of this is in the context of priority seating, which is something that's come down from the board as an interest area, and I know AAC is working on it, and our PPP committee is looking into it. The way in which priority seating is not allocated, but used on both the buses and the rail. I will say this from our discussion so far, primarily towards the bus side, as a lot of the priority seating is either not being used in the way it's supposed to, or able-bodied citizens are using the priority seating and not getting up when an actual person with some sort of disability actually needs to have that seating. So it's something we're trying to deal with and figure out where we're going to go from there, if it's education campaigns or more enforcement opportunities and such. The PPP committee then actually did a second meeting immediately after the joint committee with AAC. We met with Brian Anderson, who handles a lot of the media relations for WMATA. James was nice enough to help us set that up. He spoke a lot on kind of the outreach that WMATA does using Twitter and how they get a lot of the messaging out. One of the things we're trying to do with PPP is really look at the way in which technology can be used to improve the customer experience, which is something I think we can work with our colleagues on the customer service committee on, is how do you get the appropriate information out that will allow customers to make appropriate decisions to benefit them, but also allows WMATA to move customers around. So if you have lines that are getting backed up, can you get the information to people before they make choices that sort of put them into that same situation? Because we feel that's something that they need to do. So we're going to continue doing that. As I said, Dan's not here tonight, so I don't know what our next meeting plan is specifically. Okay, yep.
Only thing that I would add to that is I and this is one thing I said to the board, that the joint product that's coming out of RAC and AAC is a good one. AAC gave a more operational day-to-day perspective on priority seating. The work that the RAC did was a more global what is going on out there within WMATA and the other jurisdictions, what are the rules, regulations, that sort of thing. So it was a very good, balanced report. Mr. Blake, Christian Blake, did send answers to your questions. I didn't get a chance to review them, but I saw that they were there. So I just think it was a nice product that we sent to the board, and kudos to, you know, to the RAC on that, and I think it was a nice way to get started.
Thank you. Trying to get us out on time because we're going to lose our wonderful service people over here. The Leadership and Governance Committee, two things. I want to point out in your packet on page 7, there's something called RAC Committee Roles and Expectations. This is the document that I tried to send out in the body of an email and failed miserably. It got half cut off and various things. So that's the document. Take a chance, read it, and see what we had to say. Another thing on governance is that we've been asked to provide input on the selection process for general manager, and any of you that would like to, we don't have time to do that here tonight, but we need to be doing it very soon. So I would ask if you have any suggestions and things that you think are important in the hiring of the general manager, please forward those to James, and we'll do no, just to me personally. Yes, I will be, but that's fine. You can send them directly to me, and I'd review them with the other members of our leadership team, our governance team. It came from their governance group, and you may or may not know there is a there has been a debate going on about the value of having transit background versus the value of just a strong financial background, and a serious debate in the ranks. And I have some really good announcements. first of all, the Blue Line, getting the new 7000 series rail car. Okay, how have I shifted my, here it is, okay. You are cordially invited to celebrate the arrival of Metro's first 7000 series train on Monday, April 13th at 1, and there's going to be a hosted special event, a preview ride for the region's stakeholders, and the RAC is invited to attend. And I think there are some of us that would really like to do that. I know I'm one of them. So you'll get an invitation in the mail. Somebody else is. You should sit next to me, James. We have all these comments. Okay, you'll get one, but I don't think the round trip ride's 25 minutes. There'll be a brief program, and then the people who attend will get to board the 7000 series train for a round trip preview ride. If it's anything like when they open the Silver Line and, you know, all the people that got to go to the grand opening and hear the speeches and whatever. I mean, it was a lot of fun to be the first ones on. It was kind of exciting. So they're going to ask for an RSVP by next Wednesday. So when you do get it, take a look at it. And if you can do it and want to do it, I realize most of us probably have plans for any given Monday at 1 o'clock. You know, I realize that. But, you know, if you can... I was not able to see it when we had a preview of it a couple of years ago, and I had to attend a different thing for the RAP that night. So I think it'll be a neat experience to see what they have. Any more announcements? I'm sorry to say that we had resignations today from two Maryland members. I'm really quite certain that Bob has not done anything to torture our Maryland people and make them leave yet. And I don't mean to make light of it. I'm sorry to see that Karen Lynch and Deborah Christian have both resigned from the RAC. And I don't know any of the circumstances, but we will be extending an invitation to hear from them. Just, you know, sometimes it's a very unavoidable thing. It's a family thing. It's a job thing. But sometimes it's something we want to hear about because it's, you know, maybe some dissatisfaction of what was happening or... we don't know. So we'll be trying to find that out. And I'm sure you two over there will be doing something at some point about those vacancies. Anyone else have any announcements? Somebody other than me can speak. Anything?
I would like to make a comment / question.
Okay.
So it's going back a little bit to our PPP committee. One of the conversations that we had, and it's kind of come up a little bit along the way, is that we don't really have a broad way to get information from our writers outside of just this group. And we kind of talked about it. Deborah brought up, is there another way that just the general public can get some of the information for us? And I just want to put out there the idea of having a Twitter account that doesn't disseminate information necessarily, but receives information so that it would be something where we could ask questions and get responses that we can use here for our benefit. It's a question and open for a conversation, but it's just try to get the ball rolling there.
You know, we talked about that with the executive board last Thursday about not that specific thing as a way to gather information. I think there's value to that. We were also talking about we have 21 of us, and we have at least 21 experiences to speak from, but the staff has information that they've been able to gather through surveys of hundreds or thousands sometimes of people, so we'd like to tap into that as well. So I know we don't have time to discuss that, but I plant that, and I'll put that on the things to be thinking about and providing feedback, if that's okay. We'll put out instructions about who to tell what to. We've got several topics tonight, so we'll be real clear on that. Thank you. Any other announcements? Ben?
Just real quick, a separate issue. I know we focus a lot on rail, and my question is about buses. Right now, my bus line, the 60 bus line, is undergoing surveys. There's all kinds of town halls and stuff going on, and it's being done by a company, AECOM, and I was wondering what, you know, do we as a RAC or a WMATA, what oversight do we have over these different lines that are being possibly altered, changed, because it's being done by a private corporation?
I don't know any answer to that. Do either of you? Okay, thank you. Anything else? Hearing no objection, the meeting is adjourned.